at the Harvard Institute of Proteomics, we started developing a number of different technologies in terms of, you know, high-throughput cloning, high-throughput protein purification, just, you know, everything that we want to look at things in much larger scale.
This is Todd Wolfenbarger with the Lumera podcast series, and today we have Dr. Nero Ramachandran, research associate at the Harvard Institute of Proteomics. Nero, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
You are involved with some of the most exciting work in science today. You know, when the Human Genome Project was completed, it was one of the most celebrated scientific accomplishments of our time, and it seems like the instant that that was completed, people said, well, there's an even harder problem to solve, and it has to do with proteins and proteomics, and immediately after that, the focus began on that. Why is proteomics such a challenging puzzle to solve?
I think, you know, a lot of people share that sentiment where they feel like the human genome was completed and soon after we jumped into a whole different field. And I think, you know, partly because a lot of us, even through the Human Genome Project was going on, we somehow anticipated that we wanted to get to the proteins, and the Human Genome Project was essentially a way of getting there. I hate to use the word sort of a low-hanging fruit, but what the Human Genome Project essentially did created not just tools and resources, but information, and sort of set the path for this high-throughput study of biology, if you will.
Right.
And so we're no more studying, you know, biology in single tubes, we're studying biology in much larger scale. And now the emphasis is on proteomics and the study of proteins, all in part because I think we all feel that proteins are essentially sort of the foot soldiers of biology that do all the work. And in our field, predominantly we're looking at disease conditions and disease states. And our thinking is that proteins do all the work, and in most cases, when there's a disease, it's mostly associated with a malfunction in protein. And so understanding what proteins do will lead us to understanding, you know, how the diseases come arise, and also developing better therapeutics for these diseases. It just turns out studying proteins is not very easy. We have all this information, but now we're in the point of figuring out how to understand proteins from the point of making proteins, but also understanding how to study them and find out what these proteins are doing in our body. It's been challenging only because there's just so many proteins in the body, and they have different forms, and they do different things, and they're just much more complex and dynamic when compared to DNA, which was the fundamental molecule being studied in the Human Genome Project.
But without the understanding of the protein, some of the big jumps in terms of solving problems of disease and detection really can't happen. Is that right?
That's exactly right. I mean, we just have to learn how to study proteins in large scale now, just like the Human Genome Project involves studying DNA at large scale. And so it's essentially the next phase of that to understand what, you know, DNA leads us to proteins, and now what do proteins do? As we understand better about what DNA does, the immediate next question is, what do the proteins do? Because they're essentially the immediate byproduct.
Being involved with the Harvard Institute of Proteomics, just solely from the name and the respect that is accorded with Harvard, must be exciting. How did you come interested in this field of study, and what drew you to this type of program?
You know, one of the major driving forces was basically, you know, proteomics was so new, and the traditional thinking or training that I received in graduate school and previous then as well has not really trained you to think at this scale and think about the problems that we face today and sort of the large-scale biology. And, you know, these kinds of things are not in textbooks, if you will. And so what was really exciting about this was that you're entering into a new era where everybody's essentially learning with you. There's not a history of what high-throughput science was like. This is it. We're learning now. And so I think that would be the most exciting part, because it's a problem you're trying to solve which nobody's really done before, and you're sort of in it and learning with everybody else, which is quite exciting.
Do you think the people who are involved with this someday will be telling their grandchildren that they were, you know, kind of at that base point when the understanding of biology changed?
I would hope so, although, you know, you'd imagine people would look at you and probably think, you know, this is so obvious, why it wasn't happening earlier? What took you so long?
That's the pressure of science, I suppose.
That's right.
So at the heart of what you all are doing with your protein array technology is a technology called NAPA, Nucleic Acid Programmable Protein Arrays. Tell us a little bit about this technology.
Sure. You know, again, our goal is, just like in the, you know, Human Genome Project, is in order for you to tackle problems at the scale, first thing you need are the tools to start dissecting, you know, biology in the way we want to. At the Harvard Institute of Proteomics, we started developing a number of different technologies in terms of, you know, high-throughput cloning, high-throughput protein purification, just, you know, everything that we want to look at things in much larger scale. And part of this is this protein microarray technology we've been working on. What this technology is designed to do, essentially, is to be able to house as many of the genes in a given organism in a single chip, if you will,
right,
so that in a single chip we can study hundreds of thousands of different proteins and look to see what do they do in terms of function. You know, who do these proteins interact with? How do drug molecules bind to these proteins? That kind of stuff, to sort of understand the proteins outside of the cell context, if you will, to find out, you know, in its purity, what do these proteins do? And then we will put that protein back into the cell and say, well, does it do what it's expected to do that it does outside the cell?
That's critical in what you're doing, because being able to isolate any of the variables helps understand much broader, more complex problems. Is that right?
That's true. That's absolutely true.
So how is it this type of array technology different than, you know, what people have been using for protein arrays in the past?
If you track back a little bit and think about DNA microarrays, which is a huge core technology to the genome era, in fact, even genomics research today, DNA microarray technologies are core in terms of the information they generate. And, you know, our goal was to generate something similar and mirror that in terms of in the protein microarray field. So imagine if you can have thousands of different proteins on an array, all the information you could learn from those proteins. And so most folks have tried to express and purify these proteins. And if you're thinking about human proteins, a lot of times they're made in E. coli, and sometimes they're made in insect cells and so on. But the proteins are essentially expressed and purified and then spotted onto a solid matrix, a planar surface, if you will. And the challenge there is that the proteins are very labile. They're not like DNA molecules. DNA molecules are very stable. And proteins are very tricky to express and purify, and they don't hang around long enough for you to use them. So first of all, making the proteins is very difficult. And then once you've made them, if you've printed them onto a planar surface, they're just not very happy and they don't last long. And so what ends up happening is studying proteins at large scale, even in this microchip environment, becomes very challenging, because you just don't know who's active and who's not, and who's working and who's not, that kind of stuff. What Josh and I have been working on is basically thinking about ways to eliminate this problem so that proteins can be made in demand, if you will,
right,
at the time you want to do the experiment. And we thought, well, how can you best do that? And the idea is to bring the biology to the chip so the proteins are made on the chip right at the time of testing. And the way we accomplish this is we lean on the era of the DNA microarrays, and we know that DNA can be mobilized onto a surface, you know, stably, and they can last a long time. There's no shelf life issues. So then we found a way to immobilize the DNA onto the surface, and the DNA essentially has a code that makes the protein. And then we add some sort of a cell-free expression mix, essentially the biology, the machinery of the biology that's required to read the DNA and make the protein that's coded in that DNA. So what we can then do is, on a microarray environment or a planar surface, we can spot different DNA molecules that code for different proteins, and then add all the biological machinery that's required to read that DNA and make the protein. So what the user essentially has to do is take a DNA array, add in this biological extract, and then in a couple of hours they have, you know, thousands of different proteins in a small density, high density array.
That's remarkable.
So it makes it a very, you know, robust method to make proteins and study proteins.
At the end of the day, do you think that maybe finding the tools to solve the problem may be as complicated as solving the problem?
Absolutely. Because, you know, it turns out, as far as technology development goes, you constantly hear about many new technologies being developed every day. And at the end of the day, it all comes down to validation. How many of them will actually get into the hands of people that will use it, and how many of them will actually be useful in understanding or generating biological information that we can use to understand the biology. Developing technology is quite challenging, and I think there's a huge bottleneck in how many technologies are developed and how many actually make it into practice.
Let's talk about maybe some of the things that this technology is going to result in. One of the things that you all are talking about is the ability to potentially develop a biomarker discovery for cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there will be a day when many forms of cancer will be eradicated, and how will this kind of technology help if that's possible?
Sure. Well, I mean, we all hope it does, and we hope it happens sooner than later.
Right.
But I think, you know, one of the encouraging things about proteomics in general is that it's a whole new way of looking at disease. And so traditionally we've looked at, you know, a protein or a set of proteins that are involved in a certain pathway, and we've studied it really hard to find out how is that related to a particular disease. And now what we need to do is sort of spread our wings a little bit and look further and see, well, let's look at the biology of the entire system and look at all the proteins and see how well they all work together. And so it's more of a systemic or a systematic look, I believe, at how proteins function together and build a network. Mm-hmm. And we expect, especially in a complex disease like cancer, there are rare cancers where one event goes wrong, but most likely there are multiple events that will go wrong. And so diagnostics and therapy would have to target that. So diagnostics would have to capture any one of those multiple events going wrong. And therapy has to be able to treat those multiple events and be able to fix it. And so this is where I think the proteomics techniques come in very handy. So what proteomics allows us to do is essentially look at biology as a whole and find out where things are going wrong and what things are associated with the disease in particular. I think what proteomics does is sort of shines the light a little brighter. And it basically, I think, can lead us to better therapeutics and diagnostics. And they go hand in hand because, you know, a lot of times detecting a disease early on will essentially lead you to better therapy and better chance of survival.
You are working with Lumera and using an instrument that Lumera has developed, a proteomic processor. Tell us how you're using the instrument and how it's, you know, the role it's playing in some of the work that you're doing at Harvard.
The Lumera machine comes in handy in a number of different instances. So I'll sort of tell you what first got us interested in the Lumera machine is that before we looked at the Lumera machine, the proteomic processor, all our assays were pretty much an endpoint assay, meaning that, you know, a reaction goes on and we only measure the result at the end of the reaction. And so we don't know how the reaction took place, how fast it took place, and that kind of information, which is crucial to understanding what happens in a cell even. What we realized was that, you know, we're studying things at hundreds and thousands at a time, but what we lack is the resolution of the data. We're sort of skimming the surface and getting sort of binary data, but we really don't understand a lot about how these proteins are working with one another. What the Lumera machine allows us to do is it allows us to measure reactions in real time, essentially. And so we can see two proteins essentially touching each other and measure how fast they touch each other, how fast they come into contact, and how fast they separate. And that kind of information tells us a lot about proteins and interactions and their behavior and the likelihood that similar types of reaction will occur in a cell. Now, this type of technology is not new. It's all based on surface plasma and resonance, and it's been around for 10, 15 years or so, if not more. What's interesting about the Lumera technology that we saw was that our mindset now is looking at thousands of events.
Right.
And the more events we can monitor and get much better data or in terms of high-resolution data for each one of those events is very important to us. And at the time when we were talking about Lumera and the Lumera machine, it was probably the only machine out there that we saw that could do the scale that we wanted. There are instruments out there that can do sort of the one reaction at a time, but this was the only one that allowed to really multiplex and gave us the flexibility. And what we really envision is taking this NAPA chemistry that we just talked about, this protein microwave technology of producing proteins in situ, and coupling it to a system that can do detection in real time and label-free. So nothing you have put on these arrays have to be labeled or modified anyway.
Right.
So they have a number of advantages, and I think the power really is the information content that you get out of this.
It's amazing what's happening, and knowing that Genome Project that we talk about is less than 10 years old, I'm going to ask you to do something that will be really hard. If you're going to think 10 years forward, what's the discussion like in biology then? What do you think we're talking about and what might have been already solved?
Well, I think 10 years turns out in biology is not that long of a time.
Right.
But nonetheless, I mean, right now, a lot of us, in fact, many of the papers in proteomics and a lot of the discussions are generally around technology discussions, how to build better technologies, and all that is a byproduct of, gosh, could we just see proteins better in large scale? If we could do that, if there are tools out there and resources out there, we wouldn't be talking about this.
Right.
And so the discussion right now is the lack of technology and the lack of resources to do proteins at large scale and do it very well. And so what I think I would like to see is that, you know, in 10 years from now, we don't talk about as much technology anymore because they become so routine and robust and reliable that the discussion really focuses on biology and the information that we generate. How do we look at, how do we study it, how much more of the biology do we know now? And technology becomes a second nature. So I'm hoping that development will always go on, but in terms of hopefully by then we've got stable products or technologies out there become part of every lab, that generate information every day, and that we can compare data across the globe because everybody's using similar standard machines and ways to compare data, that kind of stuff. Right now, all that is very, you know, we're very much in our infancy right now. We haven't really got a good handle of how to do this yet.
Well, this has been really interesting. If our listeners wanted to find out more or learn more about you or your work at Harvard's Institute of Proteomics, how would they find out more?
I think the best way probably is to go to our webpage, www.hip.harvard.edu, and that has everything about what the Harvard Institute of Proteomics is about, all the resources that are here. It has all information about the technology that's available through this institute, and has all the contact information of all the individuals that work here. So if there's particular fields that interested people, they could easily contact them directly.
Well, Dr. Ramachandran, thank you for your time. We really appreciate you taking time out and sharing your expertise.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you.